All right, this episode, we have another guest, and this guest is going to be talking about efficiencies, essentially, right, and technology and mindfulness about technology and how we stay focused. So, Lane, what did you get out of this episode so people know what they're getting into in this one?
I learned why you never respond to my emails. I learned how important the eyes are in communication and how technology is affecting that.
Yeah. And I learned a little bit about everybody's heard of time blocking, but he talked about a way of using it a little differently than I've used it. So if you're a salesperson who says, hey, I'm doing everything I can and there's no more time in my day, or a business owner who says, my days are packed and I'm working, you know, 10, 11 days, hours a day already, this episode might be for you. So take a listen. We'd love to have your feedback. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Slow Pitch, and I see Lane over there. How are you doing, Lane?
Fantastic. How are you? Stay puffed.
I'm doing well. Stay puffed. Lane's been calling me Stay Puffed today, and I don't know why. I don't know if I gained weight or something. I don't know, but anyway, whatever it is. We have a guest today. Today, we have Rob Krechak, and he is with Humans First. And Rob, say hello. I just want to make sure that we're all good here.
Yeah, well, Lane and Rob, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to chat with you guys today.
Yeah, and we appreciate you stopping in. So the reason you are here is you have a company, your company is Humans First, and what you do is a little bit interesting. So why don't we have you just kind of give us a quick 20, 30 second, here's what I do in general, and then we'll dive into some of the stuff that you and I maybe can chat about in depth.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a consultant and technology mindfulness expert, and our mission here at Humans First is to help humanity understand how technology impacts mental health, relationships, and productivity at work. And one of the main things I do is I guide companies to officially transition from a 5-day work week to a 4-day work week with no loss in productivity or profitability. But I also want to help people use technology in a way that serves them well.
Yes, and I think that's what fascinated me the most. Yeah. All right, so you're telling me we can work instead of 5 days, I can work 4 days a week. Is that really truly possible?
Let me just tell you a quick story about one of my clients. She took our initial client survey that I have my clients take, and she met with me for 2 hours. Now, she was incredibly open-minded, and she took every single suggestion that I had. And we checked the screen time on her phone a couple weeks later, and she had saved over 40 hours of screen time per week. So she literally saved a work week of time per week, not just a day. And so that's how powerful this stuff can be if you're really open-minded.
All right. So let's get into the little bit of the nuts and bolts here, because when we're talking about salespeople, there's a lot of technology that we try to use to make our jobs easier. And, you know, we think it's easy making our jobs easier, but what's the reality? Probably not. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about how a salesperson or somebody that just owns a business, hey, I'm trying to make my stuff happen. I'm trying to sell, you know, walk me through some of the things that people would want to do at first to get into this process of really thinking about their time.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many things, but here's the statistic I would give you. So let's pretend you're having an amazing day at work. You're just crushing it. Like everything's going well. You're getting a ton of stuff done. Everything just seems to be falling into place. That's a psychological state called flow. And here's what the data shows us. When you're in flow, you're up to 500% more productive than when you're not in flow, which means you can accomplish more in 2 hours than you could in an entire day if you weren't in flow. The problem, though, is that when you're in flow and you get interrupted, it takes 26 minutes to get back into flow. And the average person, though, is checking their email and Slack once every 6 minutes and gets a smartphone notification once every 15 minutes. So you're doing the math, and obviously the average person then is never, ever in flow, which means they're never nearly as productive as they could be. Not to mention that when you're in flow, not only are you way more productive, but the way you feel psychologically is so much better. You're less stressed. You're less anxious. You just feel better too, for lack of a better way of explaining it. You just feel amazing. And so like you're more productive, you feel amazing, and you do higher quality work. Like that's incredible.
And so just so I'm understanding too, flow is you're in the work zone,
right?
Like you're in the zone, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I almost didn't picture it like, you know, pick any sports analogy where you've got a Michael Jordan or whoever, mm-hmm. pick your star, who is just never missing and always on. And they're just like in the zone. That's what you're talking about by flow, right?
So exactly. Actually, the concept of flow doesn't just, it's not for work. It is also very common in athletes, but it could also be any kind of performer, right? Like a dancer or a somebody who gives a speech, so is a performer on stage. Like all those, any and all of those professions can get into flow, and almost everyone else can as well in their profession.
And you're talking about technology. So, you know, Lane's got a little bit of experience in technology, world, let's say. So Lane, how does that make you feel? Like, hey, you're a tech guy, and what you do, does that make you feel uncomfortable?
Do you have less technology or more technology?
Well, I mean, like, you have somebody telling you, listen, what do you think about
it? Look, I sit at a computer all day, every day, and, you know, I've got Teams yelling at me. I've got Outlook yelling at me. I can recognize what you're telling me is flow. I've seen it with myself very few times. So I'm kind of fascinated to hear how we can move towards eliminating some of those distractions so that we are more productive.
Yeah. And the other thing to know too, just so you know, Rob, is Lane and I, maybe 6 months ago, had a contest who could stay off Facebook the longest. And we bet each other a beer, actually probably a beer tab, I think it was.
It was a beer tab, yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, we bet, and it was like we lasted for a long, like neither one of us wanted to lose.
Nice.
And I felt like I did not have wasted time that I used to have. Mm. Yes, I translated from, let's say, Facebook to another platform sometimes.
Sure.
But I also found that when I did that, I also was conscious of it. I was like, okay, I can't go to this, so I'm going to that. Now I'm like, this is not the benefit that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So I would do it less often. I would instead, you know, whether it be, you know, if I was at home, I would be watching a movie or watch a show or something like that where I'm trying to relax, right? But at work, it's a little different. And it's like, now I'm not surfing Facebook or some social media platform. I'm now actually working on what I'm supposed to be working on.
Yeah. So another statistic for you, the average person in America spends 2 hours and 14 minutes a day on social media across all platforms. And so it's literally
every day,
average. And that's average. Oh, so if you're a young kid, you know,
that's
3, 4, 5 hours most likely, right? And so it's literally a part-time job, you know, to be on social media. And again, like, do I think that social media can be useful for certain things? Absolutely. It can connect you with people. It can help you with your business. But you don't, for the average person, you definitely don't need to be on there 2 hours and 14 minutes a day. And so, like, my challenge to listeners is this. What if you did this? What if you just simply cut your usage in half? I'm not even saying, you know, get rid of it, cut it in half. And then you spent that extra hour per day that you have doing things with the people that you love in person, like going to dinners or lunches, or even giving someone a phone call that you haven't talked to in a while. If you did that every day and spend an hour with the people, or maybe your spouse, hey, have some quality time with your spouse on the couch, just chatting about your day, right? I guarantee you that if you spent that hour a day with the people you love instead of spending it on social media, you would feel so much more connected and supported and loved and so much more joy in your life. But people just don't think about that. It's so easy to just go home from work and scroll online or scroll because we're tired or exhausted or we're bored or whatever, a million different reasons. And that's just not, you know, humans aren't designed to do that. We're not meant to stare at a screen. We're meant to connect with the hearts and souls of other people in this world.
Yeah. There's a lot of value in that, I think, in just substituting what would be the screen time with real interaction with people and so on. I got to believe the pandemic, though, kind of disrupted you a little bit because with Zoom and everything else, having that change. Did you see or hear about people having a struggle to get back into the people mode or?
Oh, 100%, right? Like, I actually, one of the concerns that I have for society is just that, you know, we did the Zoom thing and the pandemic thing for so long. And I totally understand why we did it. It was necessary. Yeah. We needed to do it. I'm not saying we should have changed anything. It was just how it is, right? But what I'm worried about is I talk to people now and they're like, yeah, I just got so used to being on Zoom that I just kind of want to do a lot more things on Zoom. And it's like, well, again, what's interesting to think about is a lot of times with technology, you are trading convenience for something else. So yes, technology makes our lives more convenient. Absolutely. It's more convenient for me to go on someone's Facebook page and comment on their post instead of calling them. But is that really what's best for me in the long term? Like if my best friend and I cease to talk on the phone or see each other in person and just correspond through Facebook, is that really what's best for our relationship? Probably not.
No, that's true. That's valid. And I think, you know, they think about what you're describing in terms of Zoom and now wanting to just do more of that. Like to me, in a sales process, meeting in person is so much more effective. than meeting via Zoom, just because you can feel where they're sitting. There's a whole other interaction layer in there.
Well, another thing that's interesting, and I have so much data for you because I love data. I'm such a nerd, right? So the psychologists did a study about, and they asked people in different ways through different mediums, hey, could you do me some sort of favor, right? It doesn't really matter what the favor was. But here, what the data showed was that the more personal the way that the favor was asked, in other words, like if I asked you a favor face to face, the likelihood that you would do the favor for me was like 80%. But the likelihood that you do a favor for me, if I ask via email, is like 20 or 30% or something way, way, way lower. And so the point is, and again, like not, this is, you know, it depends on the situation and the person and the offer and everything. But in general, the more that you see someone face to face in person, if you're a salesperson and you ask them the same offer in the same way, it's way more likely that you're going to get the sale in person than if you did it over technology. Way more.
I believe that too, because I have a friend of mine who was in the roofing industry. He would run into permit problems. And he would used to call and get on the phone with somebody and they try to figure it out. And then they'd always get a pushback and they would tell him, well, you know, you got to go fix this and do all these extra things. And he goes, and I started to figure out when I went in person, it was so much easier. They were like, well, what if we just did that? And they started problem solving for him. So the in-person thing, very much more valuable. And I think from a sales standpoint, I find that to be very much the case, because you can have a very good meeting in person, but a good meeting in Zoom, but you're not getting that same walk away of, wow, I think we really connected on either side.
Well, and do you mind if I talk a little bit about the psychology behind what's happening with Zoom?
Let's do it.
So what's interesting is, and I've read entire books about this, right? Like the way humans transfer emotion from one to another is very interesting. So the humans have the most, we're the only species that has very tight skin on our faces, us and like chimps, right? And so what that serves as an evolutionary purpose is to communicate way more information with our faces than with any other body part, specifically the area around the eyes here, right? Like the most information is communicated with this area. And when you're on Zoom, even though, yes, you can see someone's face, what's happening is the cues are not the same. For instance, unless I'm looking directly at my camera in here, you can't see my eye contact, and then I can't see you, right? And so it sounds sort of weird, but like even that very small difference and also timing differences mean that we don't connect the same over Zoom compared to in person. And because then we don't connect the same, our brains don't know how to interpret the signals exactly, because like we're not used to that. And so like what I think might be anger might be, you know, sadness or something else, maybe not that extreme. But the point is, our limbic resonance, the way that we connect, isn't the same over Zoom, even though it's a very good, you know, platform, compared to being in person. And that leads to all these kind of subconscious psychological impacts that we don't even understand are happening, but they're happening, you know, every time you Zoom.
Oh, that explains why if I go grab a beer with Lane, he seems pretty pleasant, but when I'm on Zoom with him, he's like, he looks angry. Maybe I'm just misinterpreting. I don't know.
What are your thoughts on all that stuff, Lane? I'm just curious what you're, you know, as a tech guy, what do you think about that, the Zoom stuff?
Yeah, I'm actually going to relate what you were just talking about with the eye contact and all. I've got he's almost 20 months old. And I've noticed growing up with a baby and a toddler through the pandemic is I feel like these kids are going to be much better at reading emotion, because they can only see our eyes. It amazes me if we're out and about, we're still wearing a mask from time to time. He will look at me and he's looking at my eyes and he knows I'm smiling and he smiles. He can't see my mouth, but he can see my eyes.
That's interesting.
So I think it's really interesting. I've noticed that quite a bit. And to hear you say that, especially around our eyes, that we pick up a lot of that communication, and that really resonates. And I can see that in that face-to-face interaction, you really do need that direct eye contact and have that clear visual.
Well, one thing that's interesting, Lane, that I think the listeners might find helpful is in some of my research, I actually have researched a lot about like autism and other, you know, conditions, right? And it's very difficult to prove this, right? Because, you know, if this was proven, an entire, you know, trillions of dollars of market cap value would be wiped off the face of these tech companies. But it's theorized that heavy screen use, especially for kids under 3, can possibly be causing autism. But the other thing is, let's pretend that the kid isn't even using screens whatsoever. But let's say that the primary caregiver is, right? So what you said, you know, let's pretend it was 50 years ago and we didn't have cell phones. Well, you know, the kid would be taken care of like normal. And you just, you know, you'd look at the kid when you're nursing it and taking care of it. But now think about this. If the caregiver or the person that spends a lot of time with the kid is using their cell phone a lot, let's say they're looking at their cell phone half the time and looking at the kid half the time. Because the kid's main way of communicating with you is through the eyes, and he sees that your attention is diverted somewhere else half the time, they can sense that as a threat, right? Because they're not feeling as connected to the caregiver, and that can have a whole bunch of implications for the child's development that we don't even, again, we're not like even thinking about these things or aware of them. And so even the caregiver using technology, not the kid directly, can impact the child's development.
Well, that's fascinating.
And I think, Lainey, it was interesting too, you mentioning that, you know, if you, during the pandemic, especially when you have a mask on, he could read your eyes as a smile or not. Yeah. I remember when the pandemic started, we were in public and we would be talking to people and somebody have a mask on. And I had a hard time understanding where they were at emotionally, somebody on the other side, because I had to learn how to read the eyes. I also noticed that I particularly would start to over-exaggerate my eye movements, my eye facial expressions more than I used to, because I wanted to make sure people understood what I was trying to convey. And it never dawned on me until you just said that was something that I think all of us adults who have been around for a while have to learn. And here you have a child who is getting used to somebody that had a mask on, who started to learn that and maybe more in touch with that visual cue than maybe some other kids that were born 10 years ago, kind of a thing. Maybe true, maybe not. I don't know. Yeah. But I also know that from now on, whenever you're nursing a beer, I'm never going to look you straight in the eye. That's all I know. All right. So, Rob, when we talk about business owners who are working, I mean, you're running a business, you're part of a business. What? That's a lot of time, effort, work, everything else. I got to tell you, when I first hear, I'm going from 5 days to 4 days and I'm hearing how you're doing it, I'm like, yeah, okay, but I'm just going to end up adding more stuff to do for me. And I'm just going to take that extra time that I have and work on something else. Isn't that what we're going to do?
Well, certainly you could, right? Like if I somehow magically like did something for you and gave you 20% better productivity, you could for sure just work more, right? I mean,
yeah.
But what I think is happening, and again, this is why I'm a big fan of reducing the total number of hours worked and just working less, is, and I can kind of tell you psychologically what is happening that I think would help illustrate why I'm a big fan of reducing the number of days worked. So not every single time, but most times that you interact with technology, whether it's checking your email, a notification on your phone, something else, you know, some kind of thing like that, it activates your sympathetic nervous system. And this is the fight or flight system that keeps you alive. So 50,000 years ago, if a saber-toothed tiger attacked you and your family, your sympathetic nervous system amps you up because you either need to fight that saber-toothed tiger or run away. And so that can be good in very limited durations and in very limited instances. But what happens is, when we interact with technology all the time, again, for instance, once every 6 minutes, we check our email and Slack, we're activating that sympathetic nervous system all the time. The huge problem with this, though, is that the sympathetic nervous system takes at least 30 minutes or more to fully downregulate. And so what happens is, throughout the day, the average person is checking their technology so much, it's amping up our nervous system and it never gets a chance to recover or downregulate. What that does is that increases the stress hormones that we have, cortisol, adrenaline, and a bunch of other ones. And, you know, in a one day, is that going to kill you? No. But over 10 years, if you're doing that to yourself, this is why I know somebody, one person, a friend of mine, he's had 3 employees in the last month go to the emergency room for stress-related problems. 3. And he doesn't have like a 1,000-person company. It's a small company. People don't realize that these things that they are doing throughout the day in terms of checking their email all the time and constantly switching back and forth between all these tasks, not only are you it's super unproductive and you're not accomplishing nearly as much as you could, but it actually is the stress, like it's the root cause for, I think, for many people of their extreme anxiety and stress and burnout. And it sounds very counterintuitive, but if you can actually single task, focus and do one thing at a time, do a very high quality job, not only do you accomplish more, you're way less stressed, and you just have a much better day. And I know that that seems like a leap of faith for people, but I started doing that for myself, and the amount of things that I was able to accomplish was exponentially more. It was magnitudes more.
How do you do that? I mean, it's great in theory. Like, how do I focus on one thing? You know, running a bit, if I'm a business owner,
yeah,
how do I do that? Because it's like, all of a sudden I've got an employee comes in and says, oh, I need this now. And okay, now I got to deal with a time card punch, right?
Yeah.
And then I've got a client calling me and say, hey, I want to add this to my project. And then I've got like, how do you do that?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of, you know, the answer to that question is sort of all the things that my company does, right? To help other companies. But I can give you a couple of things that I have found very helpful and, you know, anybody could implement. It's not hard. I mean, again, this woman, one client of mine implemented all of them in 2 hours and she saved 40 hours of time.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, you can do it. It's just that you have to have faith in the process or trust the process. But by the way, Harvard Business Review did a study of 100 different productivity hacks. It was a survey of over 1,000 people. This productivity hack was the number one thing that people found most helpful or successful. So, you know, even if you don't believe me, I feel like this has some pretty good data behind it. Time blocking your calendar is essentially allocating parts of time in your calendar for specific things. But when I say that, it's not like a meeting between you and I, it's a time where I am dedicating that to do the most important thing for my day, and I specifically block it off. And the most important thing, though, is that you structure the rest of your technology use during that time so that you're not distracted. So here's what I do, for instance. During that, and by the way, the way that I've accomplished this for myself is this. Every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., repeating forever on my calendar, I have a block of time that says GSD, which stands for Get Shit Done. So that's my focus time. So during GSD time, here's what I don't do. I don't check my email. My phone is on automatically actually on do not disturb. So I don't check my phone. I don't schedule calls. I don't schedule appointments. I do everything humanly possible to protect that time so that and then what I do, I know that you can't see this on the, can't see this who are listening, but I put the most important thing that day on a post-it note. I write it on a physical post-it note and I put it in front of me. And then I work on that thing from 8 until 11 until it's complete, you know, and I put on some good techno music. I like listen to high, you know, high energy music. And like, you would not believe if you really did that, how much more you could accomplish. It is insane.
And I think that fits with what I've heard out there. A lot of people have said time blocking is a big deal. One thing, just from my perspective, what I would recommend too is when I ran a large retail operation at one point, one of the stores I ran was a $60 million business. Wow. And there was like 500-600 people there at any given time, not any given time, but over the course of the day, you would end up with having time where you would think you would be productive. But then lo and behold, you know, Joe from this department walks in, I have a problem with this. And it's something I shouldn't even be dealing with, let's say, right? Even though it is, you know, it is what it is, but I also have to be available, right? And so those problems came up from a personnel problem, right? That I have to deal with. Using the time block, what I would do is I would post every Tuesday at 10 a.m. for 2 hours. I would be in my office. You need me. I'm there. Come talk to me. I also did it on Friday. We at that particular location or a business, they made us work like 8 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night. Oh. It was like, get ready for the weekend kind of an attitude. While that was nice, and it actually made Saturdays a lot easier to do because the crew in the evening would be a little more productive because you were there. I could find better ways to use my time though. So what I would do is on Friday evenings at 8 o'clock at night, I was in my office and I said, I'll be there at 8 o'clock at night for the last hour. You come talk to me if you have a problem. And then I would do the same thing every once in a while for the overnight crew. I'd come in early and whatever. And that solved that problem. I would do that. So the first 3 weeks, 3-4 weeks, maybe at the most, people would show up. And at one point I had, you know, one in my chair and one outside in the hallway waiting. And then, you know, it was just kind of rotate through. But after about a month of that, No more.
That's fantastic, Rob. And that, you know, I call that concept office hours, right? Like I hold office hours a certain, whenever, certain time, days and times per week. And absolutely think that's a really, really helpful practice. The other thing that I find though, is that, well, people say, well, like, what about, you know, well, what if there's an emergency? And, you know, you kind of alluded to this. Most quote emergencies, they just take care of themselves when people realize that they just have to do their freaking job and, you know, not, you know, like you have limited availability.
I'm going to stop this conversation right now. If you're finding value in any one of our episodes, we want you to share it with somebody else. Just tell somebody, hey, go listen to these guys. This has been good. Second, give us a review. Tell us what you think. And the third thing, hit that subscribe button so that you always get updated every time we release an episode.
We'd really appreciate it. Now back to the show. We talk about 4-day work weeks. This isn't 4 10-hour days. This is 4 8-hour days.
Correct.
I you know, I understood that's where we were headed, but I think that's important to point out to people is, I've worked, you know, 4-day weeks in the past, but those were, you know, 4 10-hour days. And so you're still putting 40 hours in, but you know, to actually save yourself that value of a day is, that's pretty big.
Yeah. And absolutely. That's, and when I say a 4-day work week, that's also maintaining the same pay, right? I'm not suggesting we cut pay for people. Yeah. It's you work 4 8-hour days, you get the same amount of vacation, you get the same amount of pay. You just have to work smarter, not harder. Oh, by the way, I realized I didn't connect something for you earlier because we were talking about stress and cortisol and, you know, how your nervous system gets amped up. The reason that I suggest that we have a 4-day work week instead of 5, instead of just working more, is because that 3-day break, that gives our body a much better ability to fully recover, to fully downregulate, for a nervous system to relax more. What's interesting is I read an entire book about this phenomenon and this happening to police officers. And so police officers will typically work, you know, maybe like they'll work a full day or a, you know, a 12-hour day, like 3 days in a row, and then have 4 days off. And so that exact same thing that I described earlier about nervous systems getting amped up, it happens to police officers who are walking or working the neighborhood and walking a beat every week. And what happens to them is it takes them 24 to 36 hours to fully recover because they're so amped up from their job. And so if you take, you know, if we're basically taking what we learned from police officers and then applying it to the white collar world, and again, I'm not saying the nature of the work is exactly the same, but what happens to your body for a lot of people is similar. And we really just need time to be away from our jobs to let our body and mind recover.
And would you say that people think they're better to deal with it than they really are? In other words, they think they can deal with it and handle it.
Oh, I mean, here's what happened. So I worked a Wall Street job out of college. It was a very demanding 60-hour a week job. I was a sell-side equity analyst. I researched medical device and pharmaceutical companies. Really great company. I love the company. But the culture in that company is just that you work long hours. You're literally like looking at your email constantly. Like you never close your email window at all, the inbox. Yeah. You never close it.
Yeah.
And I wish I had known everything I knew now back then, but what I didn't realize is I started losing my hair. And this was when I was like 24 years old because I was so stressed out. But I had no idea or perception that I was stressed out whatsoever. But it was happening. And I was, you know, it was such a long day, such long days. And I did that for 5 years. You know, that stressed me out and caused me to lose my hair.
Yeah. But trust me, I know the feeling. I've been there. I used to work 80 hours. That's why I have no hair left. No, I'm just kidding. No, I get the requirements to work long hours, but if you can get the same amount of work done in a shorter amount of time, who was it I was talking to? There was somebody I was talking to who said they found somebody, they wanted to fire somebody, and they were wanting to fire somebody because they were constantly doing stuff outside of, like, not doing their work stuff visually. It looked like they weren't doing their work. And it was bad for the whole group, if you will, that department. And the leader of that department said, I have to get rid of this person because it's making our department look like we're just messing around. But the reality was, when we talked about it a little bit, we found out that person was getting all the work done. It just had extra time. It just and didn't know what to do.
They were just so good at their job, it made everyone else look bad, and they didn't want to. Yeah. They didn't want to admit that they couldn't work as well as that person. That's what was really happening there to me.
Exactly. And somebody said, "Well, why would you fire that person? They're actually way more effective. Why wouldn't you
have them teach everyone?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that's what they instead of firing this person, they actually retained her. Actually fired somebody else because they were the one that wasn't getting their job done and they needed more time. And it actually was like, it's an efficiency thing for the one person. Why would you take all these extra steps to get this stuff done versus, and when you think about it from a business owner standpoint, that's who you should be rewarding really, right? They're the ones doing the stuff in the most efficient time. And if they get to all the stuff done and they get a little extra time, honestly, if they can get all the stuff done and then some, and they have extra time and they're going to stay happy because they're doing things that are extra fun for them, doing crosswords or whatever it is that they were doing. 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. Yeah, it's going to cost you, but you're also way more productive. If you gave her an extra thing, she'd get it done. Give her more work. She'll figure it out. And at the same time, give her the time off that she deserves because of it, I think.
Totally.
I mean, it seems like a no-brainer, but.
Well, and you know, a lot of people still ask me, they're like, I still, you know, we talked a little about flow and earlier and all that stuff. And they're like, well, what if I can't get into flow or whatever? I'm like, yeah, fine. I get that. But let's go through some numbers, right? Cause I'm still like, people are still skeptical. Like, oh, I don't believe that you can get 5 days worth of work done in 4 days. But here's how the numbers play out, right? So the average white collar worker today sends and receives 126 emails. And so if you're taking 2 minutes per email, that's almost exactly 4 hours of your day, literally half your day. And that's just email. That actually doesn't include Slack. That doesn't include meetings. That doesn't include anything else, like the other activities related to doing your job. And so, you know, like, let's say you have 4 hours of email and 2 hours of meetings per day. That only leaves you 2 hours left to actually do the activities for your job.
What you're supposed to do.
Yeah. And so how on earth is the average person supposed to get their job done in 2 hours? Well, that's crazy. And so if you think about it, then if you can just, let's say, cut email volume in half. Again, I'm not saying reduce it by 90%. You cut it in half. That's over one work day per week right there.
Yeah. One little tip I use Wednesday. Wednesday is unsubscribe Wednesday.
Nice.
I look at my emails. What do I have that comes in? I shouldn't be getting. And it's not like, here's the thing. It's one of those, there's a fine line. I know the business owner, they're sending this information out. I don't want to be the one that's going, I unsubscribed, but I can sort it into a folder and then look at when I want to look at it. Well, but they don't think I unsubscribed.
Well, let me give you a little hack for that that actually automates that. So one thing that I do is, and at least in Gmail, I will, instead of sorting it manually, I'll create a filter and I put it into a folder that says zero urgency. And then once a week I go to the zero urgency folder. So then those emails don't even hit my inbox and I'm not overwhelmed by them, but they're still there and I can access them and search for them and I can read them. And so that kind of bypasses your inbox while still, you know, maintains the relationship. And then you get to choose when you go and see those emails. Not, they don't get to choose it because they're in your inbox all the time.
Yeah. And that's a good use of time. And it's a good use of technology then,
right,
to me. Yeah. So you're using the technology to do what you need to do to make your life a little more rich and better all the way around.
That's exactly how I define technology mindfulness, Rob. It's using technology in a way that serves you instead of you being enslaved to it.
That's perfect. Lane, any other questions?
Now I know exactly where all my messages to you go and why I never hear from you anymore.
Yeah. I don't even know who Lane is anymore. Right? All right. Rob, you've got some really cool stuff. I went to your website. I've looked at some of the stuff that you do and just talking to you the first time I spoke with you and now today speaking again, to me, there is so much value in what you're describing and trying to get people to do.
Thank you.
That's why I wanted you to come on too. This is one of those things that small business owners need. They need to hear this. They all think, I'm too busy for this. I'm too busy for that. You're not. If you're out there listening and you're thinking, hey, I'm a business owner, you don't get it. Trust me, I get it. I'm a business owner too. I have employees. I have problems just like you do. I have fires that show up out of nowhere. It gets done. And you know what Rob said earlier too is you have an emergency. Guess what happens? If you weren't there, what would happen? And if your team can't figure that out on their own, then you know what you need to do? Find a fire to give to them. Mm-hmm. And there's a fire. Take care of it, guys. Mm-hmm. See what they can do. Make it a learning experience. Teach them so that the next time when the fire shows up, they're on it. Not too long ago, my wife and I had to take a vacation out of the country. Do you know how nervous and nerve-wracking that is to leave your crew to do what they need to do, and you're not even available at the same time zone? And they nailed it. We had a Zoom call once during the week because we had to with a client. It was a big client that we just started with, and just before we went on vacation, and we said, let's do this real quick. So we did the Zoom, but one of our key employees, she ran the meeting. We were there, but she ran the meeting and she nailed it. We interspliced a couple of questions, but then she took care of it and we didn't have to worry about it again. And that's to me what you have to do as a business owner. Those of you that think you're so busy you can't do it, you can. You can.
Yeah, Rob, that's really interesting you say that. I used to own 3 Anytime Fitness health clubs and 4 You Break I Fix cell phone repair stores. And wow. Quick story, my wife and I met each other. I was living in Milwaukee at the time. She was living in Denver. And we met, like, things went super well. And so when I was, you know, I'm like, I'm probably going to have to move out to Denver. And I also just happened to want to sell my 4 cell phone repair stores at the time. So I entered into an agreement to sell them. I got this non-refundable deposit, which was substantial. I'm like, oh, amazing. So I was waiting and waiting. The transaction didn't close, but my wife and I were kind of like, we had signed an apartment lease here in Denver. So I moved to Denver thinking that the transaction is going to close and everything will go fine. Well, a couple weeks later, it completely fell apart. And so I ran 4 retail stores from 1,000 miles away for 1.5 years because I had out of necessity. And so exactly what you're saying, like, it is totally possible if you think outside the box to do these things. And I guess the thing that I hope that I can emphasize to listeners is that all the techniques that I'm saying, they're almost all guided by technology. They're enabled by technology. And so you actually don't really have to rely very much or at all on willpower. You can use technology, like you were saying earlier, in a way that is helpful to you, kind of like bumpers on a bowling alley. They provide some guidance, but, you know, you still have to do some things, right? But, like, they provide enough guidance where it allows you to work and do your job and communicate in ways that are helpful for you, but it still just provides a little bit of structure for you and the way you use things. And that, to me, is why this is so powerful, because there's almost no willpower needed once you get the setup right.
Totally. And, you know, the bumpers on a bowling alley is a good analogy. I mean, I also think about that's how Lane scored his highest score in bowling, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, no, you're right. Because the guidance is what you need. And I think when you're working in technology or you're working with social media and other things, just having something that says, whoops, you're not supposed to be here, you're supposed to be there. I mean, there's all kinds of technology out there. There's Pomodoro timers, there's automations in your phones that you can turn things off so you don't get disturbed. All those bumpers are there. They're all there.
Right.
Just you have to set them up. And if you don't set them up, you're not using them. Right. All right. So to wrap this up, how would people, you know, if somebody wanted to contact you, get a hold of you, what's the website that they can get a hold of you or look you up on? And
yeah, absolutely. So you can find out more information about technology mindfulness and the 4-day work week on my website. It's humansfirst.us. And then one other thing that I just wanted to offer listeners to the Slow Pitch podcast is a free 30-minute technology mindfulness consultation with me. So all you need to do to redeem that is just email me and mention this podcast, and I'm happy to set up a call with you. My email address is rob@humansfirst.us. Just email me there and we'll set something up so I can help you with your technology mindfulness.
That is perfect. If you are listening and you are not sure that you believe any of this stuff, trust me, it does work. There's plenty of techniques and technology pieces that you can set up. And you may think you have all the best stuff. Take advantage of this. This is a great opportunity for you to have somebody that knows what they're doing, knows what they're talking about, and can get you a good analysis of what you still have in front of you that you could still improve even more. So, Lane, do you have any other comments?
Yeah, I was asked one last question. So if we're able to bring this to a 4-day work week, how do you get us to 3 days?
I totally think that's possible. If people are focused on outcomes and not on time, if they're focused on productivity and not on trading dollars for time, that is 100% possible.
Rob, I really appreciate your time and chatting us through this and getting us an understanding of what you do, but also like helping business owners and salespeople who are like, I don't think I can do any more than I can or that I'm doing already. There's opportunities there and hopefully they'll reach out to you, but we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. Really appreciate the opportunity. I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to speak with you both, Lane and Rob.
Yep, thank you.
Our pleasure. Until next time, everybody, slow down and close more.
Thank you for listening to The Slow Pitch. Do you have a question about sales? Call or text your question at 608-708-SLOW. That's 608-708-7569. Or you can email them to questions@theslowpitch.com. Slow down and close more.
Thanks as always for listening today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Slow Pitch. We were mixed today, as always, by Johnny Polakis, and we were produced by High Gravity Studios. Music credits and other notes are in the show notes section on theslowpitch.com, and we'll be back with another episode soon.